One of the diseases which is holding back economic development in many emerging nations is malaria. It's a parasite carried by mosquitoes causing, and it depends on the type of malaria, recurrent debilitating fevers, kidney failure, brain damage and even death. There are an astounding 200 million cases each year with hundreds of thousands of deaths. The good news is that the number of deaths have halved in the last 15 years and the tantalising prospect of malaria eradication is now considered a realistic goal. Australian government money has been critical in this fight, but reinvestment is now due, and if it doesn't happen, malaria could easily be unleashed again. But other good news is that fascinating research into human guinea pigs in Queensland is accelerating the development of new malaria drugs and telling us a lot about some of the old ones. In the last few weeks, there have been a wad of papers published from the Brisbane Group, which is based at the Queensland Institute of Medical Research. One of the researchers there is Professor James McCarthy, who's in our Brisbane studio. Welcome, James.
Hello, Norman.
Just talk us through those statistics in the last 15 years, because we often hear bad news stories, but this is an amazingly good news story.
Yes, it's been a really good story. The really deployment of the methods that we know cure malaria and prevent it are when they're actually rolled out in a systematic way have really made a huge difference. I'm talking about bed nets for young children and mothers to sleep under in developing countries, which have dramatically reduced the incidence of malaria, as well as diagnostics tests, which can tell the difference between malaria and other diseases, and also drugs that really work rather than drugs that are failing, such as the chloroquine treatment, which was really a very old treatment, which was failing.
And bed nets work everywhere or just somewhere?
Well, it's a complicated story. It depends on the mosquito biting behaviour, but in many parts of the world, the mosquitoes bite during the evening when people are sleeping in their beds, and sleeping under a bed net actually protects both the people sleeping under the bed net but also people around them who aren't bitten by mosquitoes that die because of the insecticides in the bed net.
Because it's impregnated. And we forget that malaria is a childhood disease, by and large.
Yes, we think about it as a disease that tourists get, but the people who really suffer most from it are very small children and pregnant women, and these are the groups that we really need to develop treatments for, and they're most among the most difficult groups to actually develop new drugs and vaccines for.
Now, we're going to be talking about drugs, but you keep on hearing about vaccines for malaria. There's been a big push over many, many years, both in Queensland and in Melbourne at the Walter and Eliza Hall, to try to develop a malaria vaccine. Do we have one?
Well, last year a vaccine was actually licensed by the European Medicines Agency. The problem with the vaccine, it's only partially protective and the protection is relatively short-lived. So the dilemma that public health experts have is, do you deploy a vaccine that may be 30 to 40% effective across the whole population when we've already got a very crowded immunisation schedule? So you really need to know that a vaccine of that efficacy is going to be good value for money from a public health perspective.
Now, whilst there's this great news, there's also news that there's this very resistant form of malaria emerging from the Mekong Delta in Vietnam.
Yes, that's correct. So it's been recognised for several years now that the malaria parasite in those regions of the world is becoming resistant to the artemisinin drugs, which you would remember with the Nobel Prize were given last year for their discovery. And that's a real worry to us, because if that was to spread, much of the progress that we've been making over these last several years will go backwards.
Hence the work that you're doing at QIMR. Just tell us about this incredible model that you've got based on the blood of this poor woman on the Solomon Islands who was volunteering in an aid effort and got malaria.
So the real problem is that as malaria prevalence decreases, you need to go to more and more remote places to test to see if the drug works, and you need to work in populations where if the drug doesn't work, the outcome might be really bad. So we need a way to actually test malaria drugs in a safer environment, and therefore we need
and
to...
And faster, presumably.
Yes, and therefore, as you call them, human guinea pigs, although we call them healthy volunteers, these people who are willing to give up their time and come and experience malaria so that we can test the drugs in them in a very safe way.
Just briefly tell us the story of this woman.
So this woman was an aid volunteer in the Solomon Islands, and she contracted malaria and came back to Brisbane and presented to our hospital with malaria. And we'd already got permission from our ethics committee to collect blood from people with malaria for use in later clinical trials. So she basically donated half a unit of her blood, and she had the less common form and less lethal form of malaria, Plasmodium vivax. And since then, we've been able to use her blood to give this infection to healthy volunteers and then test to see whether the drugs actually work against Plasmodium vivax.
So you've kept the parasites alive in her blood. So what do you actually do? Well, you just inject a drop of their blood under the skin?
Yeah, so effectively it's a tiny, tiny blood transfusion, except the blood has also got malaria parasites in it. And then we use a very sensitive DNA test that can measure the parasites in the blood upwards of a week before people become sick. So we can follow somebody for a considerable period of time and test to see if the drug is working before they become unwell and get really very precise information about how active the drug is and how quickly it kills the malaria.
And if it doesn't work, what do you do
then? Well, we've got licensed drugs that work very well, and that's the good thing, is that we know that this woman was cured by the common antimalarial drugs that we use in our clinic all the time.
Now, let's just come through some of these papers. You've got a whole sheath of papers you've published in the last few weeks. You actually did a paper on an old drug called mefloquine. Why did you do it on an old drug?
Well, because mefloquine was licensed more than 20 years ago, and we have a lot of information about how well it works, what level of drug needs to be in the blood to cure people. So we were able to then use that drug in our test system to establish whether or not our system would predict how well the drug would do when it was treated, when people with severe malaria were treated with it. And this gave us the confidence then to actually move on to experimental drugs where we could reference back to the old drugs. And it really saves 2 years and millions of dollars being able to do these studies in this way.
So that was a proof of concept.
Yes.
And you had trouble getting that published. I mean, eventually it took years to get that paper published.
Yes, that's correct, because of the usual reasons why it takes a while to publish these sorts of papers. So I don't need to go into that on this program, but issues of novelty and interest are always difficult to get editors to take notice of.
So now you've got what they say in the business is a platform for studying drugs. Now, are these your drugs that you developed in Queensland?
No, so the really good news is that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have funded a consortium of what we call a product development partnership, in this case Medicines for Malaria, which are brokering, bringing drugs from big international drug companies into the field. So we're actually working on four new drugs at the moment, all of which have really high promise for actually making a huge difference to malaria. So the drugs are brought from overseas to our clinic, and we're first testing them for safety, and then we get really rapid data on efficacy as well.
So then you can go out into the field. Now, you just did a study on a relative of chloroquine, that older drug for malaria, and found that it worked, but there was literally a sting in the tail.
Yeah, so this is a drug called piperaquine, which was discovered by the Chinese in the 1960s. And the interesting thing about this drug is it works very well against killing drug-sensitive parasites, but has an effect of actually permitting the transmission stage of the parasite staying in the blood of people. So what ends up happening is that people are cured of their malaria. They don't feel sick anymore, but circulating in their blood are the transmission stage of the parasite that can actually then be transmitted to people in their own village. So paradoxically, they become a danger to the people around them. And therefore, we need to develop drugs which will block transmission of malaria as well as making people feel better.
So just to explain that, it's not like a bacterial infection where you get staphylococcus in your blood and it's staphylococcus. The parasite goes into your blood, and because it's kind of a living organism being, if you like, it actually goes through developmental stages. And depending on the developmental stage, it can either, which is why you get recurrent fevers, because it comes out, causes a fever, goes back. And there's one stage, which is if you happen to get bitten by a mosquito, just at that stage, the mosquito will become infected.
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. There are males and females, and the malaria parasite actually has sex inside of the mosquito before it actually reproduces in the mosquito. So we need
too
to
much
be able
information, James.
Yes.
And you've got good news on a recent new drug. Well, first of all, you discovered a new drug that didn't work at all.
Yes, well, it's also paradoxically a good story if we can actually discover whether a drug is not worth pursuing, because that saves a lot of time and money. So working with collaborators from Switzerland, from a drug company called Actelion, we were able to show that their particular drug was not worth continuing with, because it was never going to be active enough to be a useful drug. And that, in fact, is a success for our system.
So shame for the company, but it saved a lot of time and effort. And then you found one that's working really well.
Yes, well, we're working with Medicines for Malaria for a synthetic version of the artemisinin drug, which is the one that won the Nobel Prize. So this could be manufactured using chemistry. And this drug is really very promising and very powerful. And we tested it in our system. We're able to figure out what the right dose is to carry it forward into combination therapy, which is the next step.
But in fact, you found it's curative even by itself.
Yes, absolutely.
So all that's good news. But the message here is that if we take our foot off the pedal, particularly at budget time here in Australia, and don't refinance the effort, we could find ourselves back, and it's happened before, we could find ourselves back with a very bad malaria pandemic.
Yeah, so the Global Fund for AIDS, TB and Malaria has to be refunded every 3 years, and we think the outputs have been really great, and we need to keep that particular activity going until we get these new drugs that can eradicate malaria.
James, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Professor James McCarthy is an infectious disease physician at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital and a researcher at the QIMR Berghofer Medical Research Institute, also in Brisbane.